all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today a Navy veteran, Ali Taieb. Ali, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, before we tell our listeners about your academic prowess and why I've got you on, let's talk a little bit about your military experience. I've mentioned you were in the Navy. Tell us about your military career.
Absolutely. It's been a while, but back in 1992, right after the first Gulf War, I was graduated high school, and I had some experience in ROTC, and I've always loved the military, so I decided to enlist in the Navy, and I had an interest in the medical side of the house, so I became a Navy corpsman and went to boot camp in 1992, and I served almost 10 years with the Navy, and most of that time I was actually with the Marines. I was what they call a 8404, Fleet Marine Force Corpsman. So I did that. I served with 1st Marine Division, 3rd Marine Division, and I served with Naval Medical Center San Diego, and actually did some deployments as well.
And you did a little overseas time with the Marine Corps, I see. You were in Okinawa?
Yes. That's when I was with 3rd Surveillance Reconnaissance Intelligence Group and 7th Communications Battalion. And I also served with 4th Marine Regiment, if anybody's familiar with Okinawa, Camp Schwab, the northern camps. And then my last year in Okinawa, I spent as the assistant to the Command Master Chief at Headquarters Battalion.
So for those who may not be steeped in the culture of the Navy corpsman or the what role that plays with the Marines, tell us a little bit about what the job functions are for our listeners of a Navy corpsman.
So basically the Marine Corps doesn't have medical personnel. Navy corpsmen, Navy physicians, dental personnel, actually some services last year, like chaplain services, they come from the Navy side. So we get cross-trained. We go to sort of a mini Marine Corps, it's not really a boot camp, but, you know, integration into the Marine Corps culture. We do training, weapons, all kinds of things like that. And we get cross-trained into becoming medical personnel for the Marines. We do everything from, like, if you've seen, like, the MASH 477 type of a TV show. So there's that kind, which is the fleets, which supports the fleet, and they work with the Marines. And then there's other corpsmen who are actually embedded into the line with the Marines. So in the squads, platoons, into Marine Corps battalions, they all have Navy corpsmen. And we do, we're the first responders, so if they get hurt, while we're deployed, we're the first ones that see them. We're right there, side by side, shoulder to shoulder, doing everything that they're doing, except we have a medical pack on with us, and we have the extra training, in the medical field. So, when you see, when they say corpsman up or when they yell doc, that's the Navy corpsman that they're talking about.
Yeah, let me back up a little further, because you said in high school you just ROTC. Where did you grow up, and why the interest in the military?
I grew up mostly in Los Angeles. My mom and I moved to LA when I was 11 years old. I immigrated actually from Iran. I wasn't born here, but I've always had an interest in the military. I had family in the military. And as I went through the school system, California has a California Cadet Corps in junior high school, so I joined that. in high school, those it was the Army ROTC at the high school that I went to, Fairfax High School. I joined ROTC, and I just excelled in that environment. So I enjoyed the structure. I enjoyed the programs and doing that kind of stuff. That's kind of where my military interest kind of peaked.
Well, interestingly, because you went into the military, served about 10 years with an interest in healthcare, and sometimes we go in, we do what we thought we were going to do, and come on and say, I never want to do that again. But you actually came out of the military and said, hey, I want even more of this healthcare. I can really serve a role here. So tell us about your education post your military career.
After I left the military, and I didn't leave the military on the bad terms, I left under actually really good terms. I just saw myself at a point where I didn't get to, I wasn't really doing the cool stuff anymore. My job became quite administrative. And I said, you know what, if I'm going to get out of the military, this would be the time to do it. So I served almost 10 years, like 9 and a half. After I got out, I actually registered for junior college, community college, when I was still stationed overseas in Okinawa. So I registered, and I came home, and I jumped right into school. I got an associate's degree at Pierce College, which is a community college in the area. I'm still currently living, actually. And then from there, I got accepted into California State University's Los Angeles's bachelor program in nursing. I knew I just wanted to stay in the healthcare field. I always loved healthcare and the military, so it was kind of an easy transition for me to stay in the healthcare field. Graduated there in 2007 with a bachelor's in nursing, went on and went into the emergency room. It just seemed like a normal transition to, you know, being a field corpsman to doing trauma. That was kind of my specialty to begin with. So went and did ER work for a while, and I saw, you know, I want to do something different in the healthcare. And I've always also loved education. I liked it when I had an opportunity to teach my Marines about healthcare stuff. I liked it, teaching like classes like CPR or things like that. So I enjoyed education. So I kind of went on the education side of the house and went into hospital education. And during that time, I got my master's, again, at California State University, Los Angeles. I went back for my master's a year after I graduated with my master's. And I got out my master's in nursing education. And I did that for a while, and I stayed in the hospital system until last year. However, in 2014, I have to thank my wife for this. She gave me the green light to go for my PhD. And this last May, I graduated with my doctorate in philosophy in nursing at the University of San Diego.
Well,
so I completed.
It's an incredible, inspirational educational career. No, because so many guys go into the military without having that, maybe that background, or they interrupt their studies because they're just not into college, or they can't afford college. And I always tell them there's a way to do this. You just got to keep chipping away, keep climbing up that mountain.
And that's all it is. I actually spoke to a friend of mine recently, and she's all like, you know, what do you look at your long-term goals? And I said, you know what, I almost want to say I look at one goal at a time, because it can be overwhelming when you think about an entire lifetime worth of things you want to accomplish. So one goal at a time, you just chip away at it and just don't quit. I was fortunate enough, and we'll get into this discussion, I'm sure, I had resources. I had resources available to me. I had family support. I had GI Bill. I had the resources to be able to do what I wanted to do.
You commented about that a minute ago when you said, I got the green light for my wife to do this.
Right.
Again, this is a story we tell on Veterans Radio a lot, listeners, is that you've got to have that support network around you and folks who help you when you're down a little bit and push you along when you'd rather just stay on the couch. And obviously having the support to go on and get a PhD which is a huge commitment, is really something that you needed that support network to help you with, and you've mentioned it was there. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you had looked at me in high school, I don't know if I want to share my GPA in high school. Let's say I wasn't a shining star in high school when it came to academics. So if anybody knew me in high school, even any of my teachers from high school found out I got a PhD, I think they'd have a heart attack.
Well, and I like the symmetry here too. You've gone from being called Doc in the field for what you're doing for your Marines to now you can be called Doc because you've earned the degree. It's
a
beautiful symmetry.
It is.
So, listeners on Veterans Radio, we're talking then to Navy veteran and Doc Ali Taib, who actually earned his PhD in nursing from the University of San Diego. And what caught my eye was some work that you'd done along the way to study the effects of military characterization of a discharge on reintegration into the civilian community and healthcare resources. That's a mouthful, but let me go a little further with it. You put out a paper called Costs of War, Bad Papers, The Invisible and Increasing Costs of War for Excluded Veterans, that you wrote, co-wrote with Jennifer Greenberg at Brown University. I think it was Watson Institute. Tell us a little bit about that and sort of how the idea came to you and how you put the study together and what you concluded from it.
Absolutely. So this is a study that the paper, I have to say, I'm grateful to the Costs of War project and the Watson Institute for reaching out to me. They heard about my work through a mutual friend, and they reached out and said, would I be willing to work with them on this? And absolutely, just because I believe in the work so much. So let me track back a couple of years ago. And a couple of years ago, I happened to. I'm also a Jonas Veterans Health Scholar. If anybody wants to Google that, it's actually a great institution where they support nurses going for doctoral degrees, and they also support veterans health research, which is huge. So they were supporting me in my academic path financially. And they part of their leadership project was for us to work with an organization on a leadership type of thing. And I reached out through another friend of mine. It's important to have friends that know people. And he introduced me to a wonderful organization. They're called Swords to Plowshares. They're out in the San Francisco area, and they've been around since post-Vietnam, helping veterans reintegrate, get resources, get back into the civilian life. So great organizations. If anybody wants to know anything about veterans and how they reintegrate, they're one of the big organizations, nonprofits that are doing this on a day-to-day. So they introduced me to what we call whether you want to call them less than honorable discharges or bad paper discharges. I'll be honest, if you had told me 4 or 5 years ago, what do you think of a person that got out of the military that got like an other than honorable discharge or a bad conduct or a general discharge, I had a pretty negative mindset as to what kind of people received those kinds of discharges. But I listened to they had a webinar going on, and I listened to that, and I said, you know what? This is very interesting stuff. I need to look more into it and see what other research is out there about this population of veterans, because, come to find out there's a large group of veterans with these types of discharges. And as I looked into these veterans, and I saw there's really no research done on this population, specifically to this population of veterans. And that's kind of what piqued my interest. I said, you know what? I was looking at some other stuff to do with veterans, but this seems like a worthy cause for me to really look into and try to build some foundation as to who these people, who are these veterans, why are they in the situation that they are, Most of the stuff that you'll see on these veterans is through law, organizations that are on the legal side or the policy side, not so much on the healthcare side looking at this population. I looked into the population, and like I said, I saw there's really nothing out there, and I found a lot of issues.
It's interesting because it had to start with, as you mentioned, it had to start with this sort of mind shift that, maybe I have an internal bias that these guys did something really wrong, and some of them did, but a lot of them had, healthcare issues, PTS issues, TBI issues, that kind of got characterized as personality disorders, in a way to get them, this is just a way to get them out of the Corps or out of the military and out of somebody's hair.
Right.
Some of these administrative discharges that at the time the veteran just wants out and he doesn't realize it's going to impact his access to care and benefits.
Right. And that's the main thing is like we're not saying everybody's 100% innocent and everybody's good to go and no issues. We're saying it's not every case, and that anytime we lump up this is one of those like Pandora's boxes where I got warned in the before I got into this research. They said it's too big, and I'm like, I want to look at it. And when I looked at it, it really is. It's so multifaceted, and there's so many different moving parts to it that it is overwhelming. And then when you hear some of these veteran stories, and as you mentioned, there is what we're saying is the military is set up the way military commanders are assessed or graded or evaluated is based on their readiness. How ready are you to go to perform a mission, if I say right now? And when they're faced with individuals who are having what we call symptoms of mental health issues, such as PTS, or if they're having traumatic brain injury or depression, anxiety, if they're having issues with use of alcohol or narcotics or drugs or even like pain medication, things like that, when they exhibit behaviors that are associated labeled as personality disorders or patterns of misconduct, and they're getting kicked out with a general discharge other than honorable discharge, sometimes even bad conduct discharge. We have 100% proof of this is what this is doing based on interviews and based on some of the numbers that we're seeing. Government Accountability Office came out with numbers not too long ago about almost 70,000+ veterans with diagnosed PTSD or traumatic brain injury have been let go with a less than honorable discharge because of those types of things. And that's why we're saying it's an issue primarily with the way the military is set up in discharging individuals, because we are seeing the numbers increase. We're seeing the percentage increase, even though from World War One to present, if you look at the percentages, even though our numbers of the size of our military has continued to decrease just because of technology and all the new types of warfare, our military is not the size it was in World War II. It's much smaller. But what we are seeing is those numbers of other than honorable discharges have remained a larger percentage. So we're almost talking about 6% of our post 9/11 service members have gotten an other than honorable discharge, which is huge numbers if you think about it. You have 3 million, almost 3 million plus veterans since post 9/11, and we're looking at 6% of them getting other than honorable discharge. The reason it's a bigger issue is because of benefits and because of what I call in my research is the stigma associated with something like this. So it becomes even a bigger issue than just not receiving benefits, but the stigma associated with it, it makes you get labeled. And as one of the people I did an interview with said, they've taken your honor away. And these are people, these are combat veterans. These are individuals who have served, and due to a mental health condition, they're getting labeled, a lifetime label. It's a lifetime sentence. It's a scarlet letter, call it whatever you want, but it's something that's it's a lifetime label that they get stuck with, and it has extreme negative connotations for the rest of their life.
And listeners, we're talking to Navy veteran Ali Taib, who has a doctorate in nursing and has done research on issues of discharge. Ali, in the work that you did, I see that you also talked to and researched into this area of military sexual trauma and its relationship to this problem. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. So military sexual trauma is something that's come out. I don't want to say it's just come out. I mean, if everybody looks back to when there was issues with Navy pilots at one point, many moons ago. There was issues. Small stories that come out about military behavior at times. And sexual assault or rape or what have you. So military sexual trauma is something that, obviously the military has continuously worked on, trying to reduce numbers, trying to look at things, change the culture of how we see female service members. Obviously, female veterans are at higher risk, just basically look at the numbers, but there's also male veterans or male service members that also suffer through military sexual assault. And it's not just we're not just talking about physical assault, but also harassment.
And sometimes
that's part of it.
And sometimes you found that the way they get those people who are making the accusations get out of the military are being offered in quotes, take this other than honorable discharge, and all your problems go away. You get out of here.
It's a way. Unfortunately, we have seen, and actually, the Human Rights Watch did a beautiful report on this. I want to say last year, which is still very relevant. And they did huge numbers. I think they had over 200 some odd individuals they actually spoke to. Regarding this, that had received a general discharge, that had received other than honorable discharge, that had received, sometimes, it's even an issue of getting they have received an honorable discharge. However, if anybody doesn't know what a DD-214, it's the discharge paper that the military gives you upon discharge. And in the DD-214, there's a place that says that has the characterization of the discharge, but there's also a narrative. That portion of the narrative, is something, for example, that will say things like personality disorder. So these individuals that have reported sexual assault or sexual or military sexual trauma, unfortunately, have that narrative of a psychiatric issue on their DD-214. So now imagine being a veteran out of the military. And you go and you try to get a job at a corporation, and that corporation is obviously going to try to get credit for hiring veterans, right? And in their hiring form, in their application will say, are you a veteran? And at some point you will have to produce, or you may be asked to produce, your discharge paperwork. And on that discharge paperwork, when it's clearly labeled something like personality disorder or mental health disorder, it is not a good thing to go into a new brand new asking for a job, and now you're in your form that the military has given you, you have a mental health issue. There's a stigma. I don't care who the corporation is, no matter how open-minded they are, that's going to affect them.
So as we come to the end of our time today, If for our listeners out there who might have issues where they need sort of because they're submitting something to VA and all these statistics might help them, statistics like 85% of military sexual violence goes unreported, and you footnote that. So, folks, this paper by Ali Taib the invisible increasing costs of war for excluded veterans. If you put that in your search function and put in costs of war in his name, it'll come up and you'll get all the policy wonk details and footnotes that you'd expect from an academic report, but it's chock full of good information. Let's finish with this. Ali, do you see, by shining the light on this issue, as you and others have been doing, that there's beginning to be improvements in the policy out of DOD?
Out of the DOD, unfortunately, we have not seen a whole lot of movement, and it's unfortunate. However, the VA there's a new legislation, H.R. 918, actually, that just is getting, that has just been unanimously approved through the Veterans Health or the Veterans Committee. So that's one thing that's, which basically has opened up the doors somewhat to other than honorable discharges for receiving mental health. Unfortunately, things like mental health are not just that. There's other resources that people need to really be able to, veterans need to be able to reintegrate back into society. First, we have to get rid of the stigma of individuals getting these papers and having it openly, you know, on their discharge paperwork. That's one issue. So that policy needs to get changed by the DOD. However, we need to open up the VA doors into anybody that's needing help, whether it's physical, whether it's mental, whether it's housing, whether it's a VA job training, whether it's education benefits. All these doors close if anybody receives a less than just a straight honorable discharge with no narratives or anything like that. So anytime if somebody's getting a general or other than honorable, if there's a narrative that may put a pause on any benefits being received, we're denying these veterans a smooth transition back into the civilian community. And that's a huge issue. So it's not just mental health benefits. When you take away education benefits, you're saying to that individual that if you can't afford school, guess what? You're not going to school. You're not going to have a better, you know, a better job, better paying job. You end up with low paying jobs with no health benefits. It's a very bad hill to be rolling down on, because that affects family, that affects their children.
Absolutely.
So we affect multiple generations anytime we deny veteran benefits.
Well, I couldn't agree more with you, Dr. Ali Taib. I want to thank you for being a guest on Veterans Radio today and advocating so strongly on behalf of our fellow veterans. And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.